So just
to sort of summarize that, by tomorrow afternoon, our goal is for you to leave here with a number of different tools you can use to change limiting beliefs, get rid of unwanted thought patterns that get you stuck, and be able to deal with even with different kinds of physical issues, at least make a difference with those in terms of your own healing. And one of the things that's a bit challenging about dynamic spin release, on the surface it seems very simple. And often the things that work best in the world are simple. They're not always complex and require a lot of arduous work. It's the process that you're using inside of your brain that make a big difference. So you'll see dynamic spin, the basic process is quite simple. And we know that every one of you can have certain kinds of breakthroughs over the next couple of days when you apply these to your own life.
And also, how many of you have children or you interact with kids in your life in any way? You can use this with kids as young as 3 years old. I've actually done it with an 18-month-old, and so we'll talk about how you can use this with children. And what's great is it's so easy that even children as young as 7 or 8 can learn how to do it with themselves. And so we'll tell you some really neat stories about that as well.
So where this came from is back in March of 2008, we were sitting at our table in the morning having some coffee, and Chris said, "Oh, I've got this headache." And one of the things in NLP that you can sometimes do is have a kind of a dialogue with different parts of yourself. It's part of NLP called reframing. So I said, imagine just pulling that out, and what do you see there? And then often you can kind of disassociate from a symptom and find out what's beneath it, what's going on with it. And so Chris pulls it out.
And when I pulled it out, the image that I saw was like a red, pinkish, cartoonish-like brain. And what was it was going like this. The image was, and I told Tim, "This is really interesting, because when I look at that image of the cartoonish brain, it's actually kind of turning like." And for me personally, I'd never seen that movement before when we've done this kind of thing. And so Tim said, "Oh, well, why don't you just reverse that the opposite way and see what happens?" And so the phone rang, and he left the room to go get the phone. And I did it, and the headache disappeared. And honestly, I really didn't think much of it. I mean, you know, we're doing stuff with each other all the time, and it was one of those things where I forgot about it. But a couple days later, I was on the phone with a client, and a client was telling me about this problem he was having, and he said, "It's like this vicious circle, and when I think about it, it's going round and round and round and round." And suddenly, my mind just clicked those two things together, and I started asking him, "Oh, well, gee, what direction is this problem going?" And he said, "Clockwise." And we started exploring with that and got some interesting results. The next thing that happened is, I'll need to borrow your chair, Tim, because I've got, is I had a client in my office, and some of you may need to stand up to see this, but he was talking about a problem. This was just a couple days later. And he was telling me about this problem, and his foot was going like this as he was talking to it. And the more he talked about his problem, the more wound up he got while he was twisting his foot around. And you could just see he was really getting upset. And so I asked him, "Well, will you do me a favor? Turn your foot in the opposite direction, and please continue talking about your problem." And guess what happened? He couldn't. So we thought, we're on to something here.
So we talked about it, and what we began to notice is people are doing these kind of gestures all the time. We just hadn't really noticed them before or attached any meaning to it. But if you start noticing it, once you're tuned into this, you'll see this everywhere. People are doing this when they're talking. If you've seen Wayne Dyer on TV,
yes.
He the whole time he's going like this. I was wondering what would happen to his lecture if you suddenly grabbed his hand. He'd probably stop talking for a minute. But I think that has a lot of meaning for him, and it keeps him going in some positive way. It's like he's giving to you. In fact, one of the, Robert Diltz and I years ago were modeling some healers, people that were able to heal people, and they all had, almost all of them had this kind of movement like Wayne Dyer does. Try that. Actually, what does that feel like when you do that? Is it like I'm giving to you? And try it the other way, and what's it feel like? It's. If you're going to say, how many of you said he's crazy or she's crazy? What gesture goes with that? Yeah. Try it the other way. What happens? It doesn't work, does it? You're crazy now, right? So what you find is we have these different kind of meanings. Some of these are going to be sort of standardized, I think. But we have our own unique ones that we'll tend to go with different kinds of issues.
So we started exploring like this. And of course, this headache situation happened in March of 2008. So we're almost in our seventh year of exploring this. What we started doing was asking our clients or people we work with, anytime they had any type of a problem, whether it was emotional or physical, to notice where do you feel it in your body, pull it out, identify what it looks like, what way is it spinning, and then reverse the spin. And all of a sudden, when people started doing that and they were reversing the image around, it was reported back to us that the image would disappear and in its place would appear some type of metaphorical symbolic gift that had deep meaning for them, such as a lot of people were getting roses or diamonds or, and it usually, whatever that metaphorical symbol was, it turned out that it was what they needed in that moment. So for example, if they got a diamond, what that might have been about was what they really needed was to allow themselves to shine more. Or, you know, a rose, which they're sweet, they're nice, and maybe it was about they needed to be nice to themselves. And so the more and more we explored that, we started realizing that the symbols and the metaphors and the archetypical images that were appearing when people were reversing the spin on these issues was a key component of what we were doing.
I also heard it in people's language patterns, and you'll hear it over and over again. Think of all the phrases or idioms that we have for things that spin. For example, we had one of our people that we work with occasionally is a professor at Stanford, and he's a business consultant as well. And he was working with a company, and he had just gone through the dynamic spin training, and he called us up and he said, you know, I was laying in bed the other night, and I was really struggling with this problem that this company's having. And he kept thinking of what they were doing, and he kept saying, you know, my plan for them is so screwed up, it's so screwed up. And he suddenly heard what he was saying to himself. And so he turned it the other way. And he said he immediately came up with a solution that he hadn't been able to come up with. So if I say it's screwed up, that's some kind of turning. What other kind of phrases are there, do you hear? Twisted? Yeah.
Going round and round.
Going round and round? How many of you have felt like you're just going round and round and round and not getting anywhere?
Merry-go-round.
Yeah.
Spinning.
How about the spin zone or whatever it's called? On, you know, the politician spin things, right?
It turned down.
Turned down.
You're a spin doctor.
Spin, yeah. Doctor.
Wrapped around the axle.
Wrapped around
wrapped
the
around
axle.
The axle.
Yeah. How about spiraling out of control? So if you stop and think about it, there are lots and lots of phrases that we use all the time, too. And if you start listening to what people are saying for those phrases, you'll hear them more often than you'd think.
So there are a lot of ways that you can use dynamic spin release. And if you turn to page 6 in your book.
Page 6.
So you'll find the official definition of it in that first paragraph, and dynamic spin was basically delineated from NLP and from also the work of Carl Jung and also Milton Erickson were all influences when we were creating it. And of course, it has to do primarily with the archetype of spin and also with the psychology of metaphors, archetypes, and symbols. And so that's how we define it, as a comprehensive approach. We've come up with a lot of different techniques and processes that you can use. We're fortunate because we do train and teach all over the world. We've had the opportunity to really explore how to do this and have had a lot of practice in using it with different people on a number of issues. And we've seen somewhat seem like almost sometimes miraculous healings for people, although we don't want to say that this is a panacea for everything, because it certainly is not. So we've seen people who have burned themselves, and they've had good luck in reducing the severity of the burn. Tim, I know, had a client who had really severe sleep apnea.
He carried a machine. He had to sleep with the machine every night. And he did the process once, and it went away. And he went to his doctor, and his doctor was pretty impressed that he was able to change that, because the doctor said, normally this isn't, you know, something to fool around with, but he was able to even change sleep apnea fairly quickly. So sometimes we've seen things that seem miraculous. Chris mentioned when she was going through her kind of healing journey and for those 21 days. And of course, she was saying it was a pretty scary time for us. And she'd have a panic attack about every afternoon at 5 o'clock. And this is one of the things we'd do with it. Of course, I was having mine too.
Yeah. And one of the first stories that came about was a mother that had done it with her 4-year-old son, and he had fallen in the shower and he hurt his hip, and he was screaming and crying. And so she said, well, where do you feel the pain? And he said, you know, pointing to his hip. And so she had him, you know, well, take that pain, pull it out. Kids love to play pretend, right? So pretend that you're pulling it out. Pretend, what do you see? What color is that? He's like, red. Well, if it could turn, what way would it? Okay, well, reverse the spin of it. And so she did, and he got it going faster and faster, and he got a puppy. And so he started laughing and giggling. And then, of course, after that, he started talking incessantly. He wanted a dog. And so his mom actually went out and bought him a puppy.
Yeah. It's funny, we talked to her a couple of years later, and she said that he was using it all the time. Like, she saw him fall off he was just learning to ride his bike when he was 6, and he crashed and burned and hit his knee and was bleeding. And of course, mom runs over and says, are you okay? And he goes, I'll just spin it out.
So a couple of years ago, we had a Microsoft executive come through this, and he used it a lot in his business development coaching, but he also had 3 kids. And his 10-year-old was going through some issue at school. And so he checked in with her a couple, like a week later, and said, well, how are you doing with that? How's that going? And she said, oh, Daddy, I spun that out. That's all gone. And so I love that you can do this with kids. You can also use it, as we said, for limiting beliefs. And in a moment, we'll be showing you a video about how you can use it with limiting beliefs. It's only about 7 minutes long, but it will illustrate how to do the process. Before we do that, though, we'd like to talk about the intrinsic value of spin in our universe, because it seems like
the nature of spin.
Everything spins.
Yeah. So if you think about it, think about the cosmos. And actually, if you turn in your book list to page 10, there's a little story about our cosmos, and it's, the Milky Way is a galaxy to which our solar system is located. It's a barred spiral galaxy that's part of the local group of galaxies. It's one of the billions of galaxies in the observable universe, and here's a picture of how it might look. You can see where our sun is. We're kind of on one of the outer arms there. Interestingly, you travel thousands of miles every second. In the time it takes you to read this sentence, you've already traveled more. Here's the breakdown. Planet Earth is spinning at 1,040 miles per hour at the equator. At the same time, it's revolving around the sun at 67,000 miles per hour. And our sun is spinning through the local star cluster at 45,000 miles per hour. Moreover, our local star cluster rides on the outer spiral arm of the Milky Way, which is rotating another 500,000 miles an hour. The Milky Way is spinning through the local group of galaxies at about 180,000 miles an hour. And the local group is moving through our universe at an estimated 540 miles per hour. So the one thing that physicists will agree on is that things are in motion and they're spinning motions. And if you think about from where we are here, all the different ways that we're spinning. Surprising we're not confused at the moment.
Well, and then you can take it the opposite direction as well. So if you think about the quantum aspect of the universe, what is the universe made of if you think about it?
I mean, we're all made out of organs and tissues and bones, and what are they made out of? Molecules, right? And what are molecules made out of? Atoms. And what are atoms? Atoms are, yeah, and they're made up of subatomic particles. So if you take an atom, it's like a, you know, if you take an atom and put a nucleus of, say, a hydrogen atom, which is the most common one, in the middle of a football field, the outer part of it's spinning around the edge of the stadium. So atoms are actually mostly space. And then the things that atoms are made out of, as Mo said, are subatomic particles. And these are little spinning bundles of potential. And a lot of physicists say, you know, they don't exactly exist. They exist as possibilities. And so we have electrons and protons and neutrons and croutons. And
so if you think about it, everything is spinning. And you can also look at this from a neuroscientific standpoint, which is if you think about what happens during the synaptic transfer in the brain, and that's when the firing of neurons take place. And you've all seen that somewhat Michelangelo image metaphor of a synapsis happening. What happens, though, is you have a synaptic cleft in the brain, and from one neuron to the other, there's a firing that takes place. And this is what's called the synapsis that happens in between. Well, guess what's going on in that in-between place in your brain? There's a firing off of ions. And guess what the ions are doing when they're firing off? They're spinning. So this is going on inside of our brain. And so my sense is when you think about the quantum aspect of the universe that everything spins, and you think about the neuroscientific aspect, and you think about the aspect of our galaxies and that everything's spinning, it makes sense that there would be something to the psychology of spin and that our thoughts would spin to a certain degree. And it's interesting, as you start getting more into this, you start noticing just how prevalent spin is in our universe. But it's not, this concept is not new. The idea of spinning is a very old concept. As a matter of fact, how many of you are familiar with the whirling dervishes? They're Sufi dancers, and they've been dancing for over 1,000 years now.
Actually, they came from a group of people that was started by the poet Rumi. Some of you may know Rumi's. It has an amazing poetry.
And his poetry started after he started the whirling dervishes.
That's the whirling dervishes begin to spin counterclockwise like this. And they go into a trance after a while, and they have these really deep mystical experiences. And Rumi developed that after he, being a devout Muslim, went on his pilgrimage to Mecca. And when you go to Mecca, you walk around this building called the Kabbalah.
The Kaaba.
Seven times.
Counterclockwise.
And he was so moved by that he started thinking about moving in this counterclockwise direction and developed this whole spinning, whirling dervish kind of mystical experience that people had. And at that moment, his poetry blossomed. And
I never knew that the journey to Mecca was all about going to a square building and then walking around backwards 7 times. There's some amazing videos of it on YouTube, though, because typically they'll gather about 2 million people a year, and you literally can see 2 million people walking in a synchronized motion around the building, and it's amazing. So spin is a prevalent aspect of our universe, and we'll share one other interesting scientific factoid on page 11, which has to do with the quantum physicist David Bohm, who was a protege of Einstein, very well-known physicist. And what Bohm observed is that if you drop ink inside of some glycerin, and it will just drop in there, and there's this jar where there's actually a YouTube video of it.
It's interesting to look it up, but glycerin's this kind of thick fluid. You drop a drop of ink in it, and you begin to turn it, and so the drop of ink begins to spread out, and eventually it dissolves into it. And then when you reverse it, the spin, it brings the drop of ink back into a drop again. It's really interesting. So Bohm came up with the idea of the implicate order of the universe, the field that exists that we're all a part of. And so that came out of this idea of spin too. So spin, the interesting thing about spin to us is that it's something that exists everywhere in the universe, and it's one thing physicists will agree is happening everywhere. We're spinning in many, many ways all the time.
And people do it quite unconsciously. Years ago, we were in Australia out with some friends, and the woman we knew quite well, she had a new boyfriend, and he was in the midst of a divorce, and he was telling us all about this. And as he started talking to us, he had there was a salt shaker in his hand.
Big, and he kept moving it like this. And the more he talked, he started going faster and faster, and he got more and more upset about what was going on. And Chris had enough rapport with him at that time. She just kind of reached out and gently stopped him. And he changed the subject. But he didn't do it like, oh, I'm talking about this and moving the salt shaker. It's more like it just kind of interrupted him, and he started talking about something more happy than that.
And it's amazing how people do this unconsciously. We have a favorite restaurant in Burlingame that we like to eat at, and there's a waiter there we really like, and so Tim and I had ordered, a bottle of wine to share with our meal, and when we were done with it, the waiter came over and started talking to us, and he put his hand on top of the bottle. The bottle was empty, so he was going to take it, but instead he put his hand on the bottle, and while we were talking to him, he was literally like spinning the bottle around, and it was all quite unconscious on his part. And I just thought, wow, a little part of me wanted to reach out and see what would happen, but I didn't.
It was a pleasant conversation.
It was a pleasant conversation.
He was obviously spinning in the right direction somehow.
So this would be a good time probably to show him how it works. We'll show you a video now that's 7 minutes and 44 seconds long. And you'll have an opportunity to see how this works. And in the video, it's me working with a woman. This was right after we discovered it, or about a year after. And what I'm working with in the video with her is a limiting belief. And she apparently got such a powerful change when I contacted her that she agreed to drive an hour and a half 6 weeks later and allow me to film a testimonial. And the testimonial is about 90 seconds long.
Turn out the lights.
The original video, the quality of it is much better than the testimonial, because we were doing that with the handheld camera where we had a professional photographer on this. But what you'll see is you'll see me working with her on a limiting belief. You'll see how to do the process. And then when we're done with all of that, we'll do a live demonstration for you, and then we'll break down how to do the process. And then you'll have an opportunity to go out and do it with someone and do it and have it done with you, and you'll see how effective it is and how easy it is. So with that, let's go ahead and start. So as you see, that was 7 minutes and 44 seconds long, and she had a powerful shift. And so we got the testimonial from her, and forgive us, the sound quality on it isn't very good. Well, here's the backstory. When I was working with Cezanne, could we get some lights? Thank you, Vivian. When I was working with Cezanne during that demo, I knew something powerful had happened, and so I felt compelled to call her. So I called her a couple of weeks ago, and she said, that process you did with me has completely changed my life. And so, of course, I asked her for more details. And it turns out that when Cezanne was 3 years old, she was crawling around on the floor. She found a cord, like an extension cord outlet that was already plugged into the wall. And she put it in her mouth and she started sucking on it and literally got electrocuted and pretty much blew her face from about here below. In the video, she had over 30 plastic surgeries. And in the video, you can see, if you look closely, you can kind of see right here some little lines. I knew something had happened when I was working with her, but it was so minor, but she nearly burned her tongue off. I mean, she was lucky that she got to keep her tongue. And so her limiting belief was it's best not to speak. Well, what had happened was because of this hideous accident, she couldn't talk for a long time. And this, she was living in France at the time when the accident occurred. Well, her parents moved her to the United States when she was about 8 or 9 years old. So now not only does she have this deformity, but she's having to learn another language. And so she just basically went quiet. And so when she did this process, it not only helped her eliminate, you know, what she said was 30 years of trauma, 30 years of trying to work through the issues that were around this, that she had let go of that, and that in turn she had decided to embark on a public speaking career. She had got a new website, she got a new picture, so she was literally allowing herself to come out of the box. And so she talks about that, and you can see she's even dressed differently in the testimonial, if we can get it working. And the other thing is the part about the angel wings, when I said, well, I don't normally do that when I'm doing that process. You'll see we have a different way we do it. But when Cezanne came into the training that morning, she was wearing this beautiful Levi jacket that had angel wings embroidered on the back of it. And I commented to her and asked her what that was about. And she said, oh, these are my wings. They take me wherever I go. So I knew, thinking about the psychology of metaphors, archetypes, symbols, that the wings would be a powerful symbology to help transport that box that she was inside of out on the adventure. So that's the reason why I've incorporated that. Some people think it was just being kind of airy-fairy or whatever, but I was actually taking something that was of significance to her. So, and we got her total permission, by the way, to share this video, because it really illustrates beautifully how well the process works and how simple and easy it is. So should we load up the testimonial? So she wanted to get on camera and let people know. It was actually a 2-hour interview, so it was really hard for me to figure out what to take, you know, so I just grabbed these 90 seconds. Sometimes I wish I'd grabbed a little longer. So that's the process. So this process is outlined in your book. And let's see, what page is that on? It's on page 13. And we'll go ahead and demonstrate for you. And we'd like to ask you to think of not a big issue. Please don't give me your biggest life issue, okay?
Why not? It works.
Well,
it does.
It does. So, we also don't want to limit what you can do, but it's often best, you're going to be working with someone else, so it's often best to work with something that's going to make it easier for your partner not to worry about your biggest life issue. It's funny, maybe the second time we actually trained this, we made that same comment, your biggest life issue, you know, don't do that. And somebody came up and they just watched the video and she said, actually, as we were doing it, it turned out to be her biggest life issue.
And she had been sexually molested and raped a lot as a young person. She grew up in the Middle East, and so that's prevalent. And so she had a lot of issues around sex and around her sexual identity. And so when I had her up in front, she told me this, and I'm just thinking, oh, great. You know, and this is, of course, in front of the whole class. And, you know, when you bring up sex, it makes everybody a little bit nervous anyway. And so we worked on it. She got a powerful shift. And on the second day, she was sitting in the front row, and all of a sudden, she just blurted out of nowhere, "I'm feeling so sexual," and, you know, which for her was a good thing, because that was her issue. She couldn't allow herself to go there, you know. So, anyway, she wrote us a very long testimonial, and she said that whole area of her life was working quite well.
She actually
after
wanted
that.
Us to show the video of her a lot because. Because it would help people in her country.
Yeah, she had this big mission around it for, you know, Middle Eastern women. So please, though, do not bring anything like that up here. Some good things to work with are...
Or some kind of negative thought pattern, something you worry about.
Maybe you're feeling worried or anxious about something.
Maybe you feel guilty about something you said or did. Maybe you don't have to divulge content either. In fact, it's better to do most of this without content because people get caught up in your story.
You might have a small ache or pain that you're dealing with, and that really
headache.
Works well for that. So we've had some incredible results. I know when we were first developing it, this was in the Netherlands when we were teaching it with Peter Dallmeyer, and their assistant had this horrible red spot on her hand, and I know better now, but I asked her, what's that? What's going on? And she said, oh, I burnt myself really bad, and this had been like a couple weeks prior, and it was really taking its time to heal. So we just did the process on that, and when she came in the next day to the training, redness was down by about 60%. And by the following day, I mean, you could still see it, but it was about 80% better. She had kept spinning it, too. We'll show you some other little things that you can do to keep it going.
Sometimes you need to spin it several times or over time, you know, a day or two or three. Last year, the person that we worked with as a demo person had her skin was cracking, and she had some kind of condition where the dryness in the wintertime was really getting to her hands, and she'd crack, and you could see little cracks and stuff. And by the end of the day, they were gone. Some of the resource people may remember that from last year.
And sometimes people just, you know, a lot of people have just little aches, like a knee pain or a foot pain. And
you twisted your ankle, or?
You tend to get more the immediate result if it's something it's a more recent
acute
thing. But if you do have a chronic issue or a chronic pain, like I had a client who had a neuroma in her foot. Do you guys know what that is? It's literally, it's a growth like a bone spur that develops where when you walk, you literally feel, it's like you're stepping on a marble. And it's really painful, and it was causing her toes to splay. And so, she did this process with herself over the course of 3 months every day, you know, because it only takes, you know, once you really learn it, you can do it in 3 or 4 minutes. And it completely disappeared. Yeah. And she was really happy because she had been doing all this research and had found out that really her only option was surgery. And the surgery apparently goes wrong about 50% of the time, and you end up with a worse problem. So, you know, we always say, when in doubt, spin it out.
Because you've got nothing to lose, but 7 minutes maybe. Yes?
Okay, so can you amplify a positive feeling?
Yes.
Spinning it faster or something?
Yeah, we'll show you that. We'll show you how to do that.
We'll
you
show,
definitely
and
can do that.
I won't get into the specifics. I'll do it later. But I do quite a bit of that in my client work because so much of coaching is people want state management or state maintenance or be able to manage their state in different business situations or even in their personal life or with their kids.
So you can take some real positive thing and think, which way is that spinning? And then spin it more slowly, and you'll find that often it'll amplify that. Yes?
Last year when I had knee surgery, and I was resourcing for you in the health class. I had just had knee surgery, and I was told I would be on crutches for 4 days and sedentary for a week, and I didn't walk for about 14 weeks. And Chris and Tim called me and said, just come to the health class. We'll help you with healing. So I've been in NLP for a long time and wasn't doing any with myself, which was interesting learning for me. But Chris did a process with me. Tim did a process with me in the front of the room. And Tim asked me, how long will you need to heal? And I said, 2 weeks. So that was 2 weeks in addition to the 14. I had already been in bed, literally in bed, on bed rest 16 hours a day. When I went back home, one of the things, because what came up for me when I was working with Chris is that I had a lot of forgiveness to do. So my quad was creating this opportunity for me to work on my forgiveness list. And so I started working on the forgiveness process and kind of working through my list. And as I did that, then other pains started coming up. So I had some foot pain. I had some other new knee pain. I had all these pains that were coming up. And so I pretty much, for that 2 weeks, laid in bed, did the forgiveness process, dynamic spin, and six-step reframing for 2 weeks straight. And in spin specifically, I got a lot of stuff out, how I was not having enough fun in my personal life. So I basically, this whole knee, I think, and my quad really created the opportunity for me to redefine my life. I ended up taking a new job, moving down out of the state, and now training in NLP in my own way. And I know that came out of that experience, but I wanted to highlight spin specifically because it's so simple and so elegant that I even forgot to do it, but I had some of the biggest shifts in there, specifically with my quad rebuilding itself. So it can be a physical ailment or something that's limiting you. You can apply it anywhere, really.
Yeah, thank you.
And she was walking you too.
Yay! Yay! So yeah, you can use it with a lot of stuff, but like we said, Let's choose something smaller.
So if it's an unwanted thought pattern, some emotional response in relation to something you don't really want.
If you're feeling tired or you're feeling off balance, sometimes I know when I'm training, before I go into train, I might just be feeling a little off balance, and so I'll take that and spin that out.
So is there something coming up in the future that you may be nervous about or anxious about, or?
So let's get a few examples, and I see a hand right there, so what? We'll get a few examples. So, Christine?
For me, I have social anxiety.
Ah, okay. And how long have you had that? She has social anxiety. Sorry.
Okay.
Okay, that could be one that you
and
could
so
work
for something
with.
Like that, social anxiety is kind of a broad category, so you'd want to think of a specific context. By the way, as a rule of thumb, whenever you're making a change, you want to chunk it down to a context, a situation, a where, when, and with whom. Context is what gives things meaning. Things don't have meaning without a context.
So, Christine, you might want to think of a specific place or situation where you feel that.
I just, you know, when I'm home.
Yeah.
I just feel in my tummy.
Uh-huh. So okay. She feels it in her tummy, so... Of course, that's probably right where you would start. Okay, so that would be a good one then, is to do it in the context of you being at home.
Yeah.
So let's get some more examples. Thank you for.
But by the way, did my comment make sense to everyone? So if somebody says I have an issue with my esteem, that's kind of a vague, kind of conceptual thing. So you'd want to say, what exactly happens? What's the behavior that goes with that? So maybe the esteem is I meet new people and I get nervous. So you think of a time when you met new people. So you want to work on something very specific like that.
Yes.
Content of my work video. I'm about to make a video.
Sorry, the air came on just as you said that.
I'm going to make a video for my work, and I'm worried about the content.
Oh, okay.
Kind of so nervous about it a little bit?
Yeah.
You're feeling nervous.
Not, like, clear with this.
That's a really good one. One of my clients had to do a TED Talk for her, with her company. And she was feeling pretty anxious about it because all of the senior people were going to be watching it. And so she spun it out. She did really well with it. So that's a good one.
Dana?
Can it be like an emotional trigger that was caused by somebody or a conversation with somebody?
Yeah, that often works pretty well.
Well, and you'd want the specific emotion. That's what you would be dealing with. So that would be good. Mo?
Delivering bad news.
Do you have to go give bad news to somebody? That kind of thing, or?
Necessarily have to be bad news, just like disappointing someone.
Okay.
Like, you know you're going to tell them something and they're going to have a certain response.
Yeah, I think it would help with that.
Yeah, definitely. Any more examples? Yes.
Coming into a situation, feeling a personal situation, feeling unbalanced.
That would be a really good one.
That would be a good one. And you're feeling unbalanced in that situation and uncertain. Okay.
Yes.
Fear of speaking in front of people.
Okay, so you're wanting to speak. It's hard to hear with that fan on, isn't it? But
fear of speaking in front of the people, like public speaking.
Okay, yeah. Like having to speak in front of a group or. That'd be a great one.
That would be a great one. Yes, Sunny.
I have had this pain in my hand for a week now.
Do you know what it is?
No, it just started happening.
Just sort of all of a sudden it's there and you're noticing it?
And what's the level of the pain on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the highest?
Well, it's actually like a 5 or a 6, but I can't really grab anything over 2 pounds with my hand because of it.
So if you grip something, then it hurts worse.
Okay.
By the way, with pain, especially acute pain or new pain, you want to be a little careful because pain has signal value. So there can be ecology with pain. If you just, somebody's getting frequent headaches or something, you just wipe it out. It may not be a good thing because who knows what that really is. So with pain, you want to be respectful of that and check out. There might be a positive purpose with it, but we'll show you how to do that. Yeah, motion sickness would be a good one. Like you're driving in a car and you start...
On a boat.
Oh, okay.
Or anything spinning in the amusement park.
I would try it on. By the way, no matter what you say, we're going to say yes to it. Because you can't really lose much by doing it. You'll learn something. And it almost always makes some difference. So it's worth trying on anything, and it doesn't take very long, so.